Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, in TV land and out in the audience. This is the regular meeting, Thursday, October 6th, of the Harbor Advisory Board, the City of Morro Bay. Welcome. First, I'd like to have just a moment of silence, if everyone can bow their heads for a minute. And Jean, if you could help us with the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd appreciate it.
Ready to begin.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bill, I think you need to establish a quorum as well.
Oh, that's right. We need to establish a quorum. We do have two absents. We have the fisherman slot, Joe, I believe, and we have Ron, but we do have a quorum. Is that correct? Thank you. So, Jean, do you have anything to share with us tonight?
I apologize for not being here last month at the meeting. I had something else going on, personal thing. But I'm here to work.
Lynn?
No, I do not.
I have two things. On the screen up here, it's very important, people that want to know what's going on in the Embarcadero or would like to have some input in the plans and for the general meeting next Wednesday, October 12th, at the Vets Hall from 6 to 8:30, the Planning Department, in conjunction with the three-year general plan update, is going to be discussing the Embarcadero segment. So this is an important meeting for people that are interested in what's going on or what isn't going on down here and to help provide some input. And then the second slide. Thank you. We are holding our next second annual drive-in movie at The Rock. And actually, that's last year's flyer, but it will be November 5th, and we're going to be showing Rumblings in Shangri-La and Vertical Lines. And that will be November 5th, Saturday night. And I do apologize, that's last year's. Thank you. Neil? Dana?
The San Salvador is here. If you haven't been down on the Embarcadero by the South T Pier or out to the Rock, you can't miss it. Go take a tour. It's only half price of what they charged at Channel Islands.
You know, when you look at that boat, it looks like one of those little cartoon ships, you know, you can just see it going back and forth, back and forth.
I did have a chance to tour it on Tuesday, and it's an impressive sight. And the thing that, you know, not being as probably seaworthy as a lot of people up here, just the amount of ropes that they have, and each rope designated a certain function, it's just incredible.
There is only one rope on a boat. The rest are lines.
Okay.
The rope is a bell rope.
All right. Lines. Thank you, Jean. Do we have any public comment period on anything that's not on our agenda? So, seeing no one here in the audience, I'd like to. We have nothing on the consent calendar. Why don't we have any? Don't we have to?
We normally approve minutes from the last meeting. We didn't get them done in time for posting this agenda.
Okay.
They don't have to get done by the next meeting time.
Okay. All right. So that's it. All right.
And item B1 coming up, it had the same problem, so it's going to be just a verbal today.
Okay. The Harbor Department status report, Eric?
So all oral, all verbal. We don't have anything written for you. I'm just going to kind of go randomly through a list here that I've thought up. probably alarmingly, but most importantly, but fortunately so far it's turned out okay. One of our commercial fishermen, Mark Hammerdinger, he owns the Black Mariah. I think he's trying to sell it, but he was fishing off of Port San Luis. Been out of Port San Luis for a while now. Was about 15 miles offshore and got his arm caught in some kind of equipment. Sounds like either a crab block or something. The initial radio call we heard, we only heard the Coast Guard side, and he was reporting that his arm was severed, which obviously wasn't good. Port San Luis got some CAL FIRE medics on board, got a couple commercial fishermen on board, ran out in their boat, found him. He was talking on the radio the whole time, pretty calmly from what we understand, considering what had happened. They got him, brought him back, got him on an airplane and flew him up to San Francisco. Becca Kelly texted with him today, and he actually had sent some rather graphic x-rays back. So I think what happened is he crushed his forearm pretty bad, but he reported all his tendons and arteries and veins and nerves are intact. So if they can rebuild the bone, hopefully he'll be okay and regain use of his arm. But it was sounding pretty sketchy there for a while. So, and then they put commercial fishermen on his boat who drove it back into Port San Luis. So hopefully he's doing okay, and we wish Mark the best. So a bit of a scary happening there. So, and he was all by himself, which isn't good. So San Salvador, Dane already mentioned that. It's leaving Monday morning, I believe. So this weekend will be your last opportunity to go take a look at that boat. Pretty darn interesting. Like Gene says, it's pretty amazing when you think about them going off into the great unknown with the not knowing where the edge of the world was going to be in a little boat like that around the world and exploring. It's pretty amazing. So go take a look at it. It's definitely worth it. The unaudited budget numbers are in from last year, from FY15-16. Although I've still got a few line items that I need to reconcile up with finance. It looks like we ended the year with about $300,000 to go into the bank, which is good. So revenues are exceeding expenses again. As you know, we were a little behind for a while there. So we came in right on expenses in terms of the numbers we anticipated. But revenues came in nice and healthy above. So they didn't come in above much. They came in about 4% of what we projected. So as you know, the last couple of years, the revenues have been climbing 10, 15, in some cases 20% on some of these years. As the economy's rebounded, what looks like we're leveled back out and we're about to where we were pre-2008 numbers. So that's great news. We're looking pretty good there. Harbor Festival went fine. I was down there both Friday afternoon with some setup stuff and a little bit on Saturday, so from what we can tell, everything went great. Lots of people, crowded, another great event. Beginning of that event, we had Harbor Festival, but that morning we had the Jesse King Memorial Paddle. As you may recall, Jesse was one of our part-time patrol officers and a full-time Coast Guardsman when he died in a diving accident off Cambria about 7 years ago now, 8 years ago now. So we've resurrected with the Memorial Paddle. We were doing it from Cayucas to Morro Bay generally. The forecast come Wednesday, Thursday was looking pretty marginal with fog. As you remember, in the middle of last week, had real thick fog, and then the forecast for the afternoons was for heavy wind, northwest wind. So we figured by Saturday, while it may be foggy with marginal visibility, the wind from the evening before was going to be a pretty rough ride, so we elected to hold it inside the bay, which we did. So we went out to the entrance area, looped around, circled back towards the inn at Morro Bay, and then back out to the entrance and back. Had 32 participants, two outriggers that had six people each. I believe we ended up collecting about $1,200 from that event in the entry. So the paddleboard company was great in helping sponsor and organize and help us keep track of that event. Had a lot of good sponsorship, so look for that again next year. Lifeguard season is now officially over. We've come Labor Day, we go to weekends only, which we did through the Harbor Festival weekend, and now we're back to no days. So we'll probably end up sometime in the winter. It seems every year in January, February, we get that weird weekend or that weird week of 90 to 100 degree weather. We're anticipating that. We'll probably call lifeguards back in and have them roving. But we're taking the two lifeguard towers off the beach. Tower Zero, we're still kind of on the fence whether we're going to leave it there over the winter or not. Just kind of weighing the options of inconvenience of moving it and having it, inconvenience of having it available for those odd weekends where it gets crowded and it's hot and sunny. versus wear and tear on the tower and exposing it to the elements and potentially a bad winter. So we're still batting that one around. We'll see what happens with that. Boat 6-4 recently came back from the Radden Yard. We sent it down there trying to keep ahead of the maintenance as opposed to running things until the wheels fall off and then work on them. So we're bringing it down, brought it down a couple, 3 weeks ago, had him just kind of do a basic refurbishment on it. He repainted the bottom, went through, found little cracks and nicks and chips and things where water would eventually get in and cause problems, and just did a good overall kind of mini refurbishment on that boat, and it's back. Corps of Engineers, they've got a contract out for dredging. Contracts were due in about middle of September. They've tentatively awarded a contract to it's a small business set-aside project. It's not going to be the Mansons of the world coming to bid on it. It's smaller companies. There's a company out of, we have got an office in Sacramento, but I think they're based out of Alaska called Aetna, A-H-T-N-A. They're the apparent low bidder. They're going to be able to get all the sand trap. They're not doing really any entrance work. The Aquina is going to continue to do that. The sand trap area, the Morro Channel, Navy Channel, everything in front of the pier. There's a high spot down off Tidelands they'll hit, high spot down off the south end of the bay that they'll hit. So about 280,000 cubic yards. Not a huge contract, but they're coming in. According to the project manager at the Corps, they've proposed using entire pipeline equipment, hydraulic dredgings, which will be interesting. They haven't come up with their work plan. They're working on getting that submitted next, and we'll see what they're proposing. But if you've been around here, as you know, the most companies that use that hydraulic pipeline dredging, they go up to maybe the North T-Pier, South T-Pier at the most, and then either bucket or clamshell it from there. I've never seen anybody bring a hydraulic dredge down that far and figure out how to float a pipeline and booster pump it and do all that stuff. So we'll see how that turns out. Beach Street Slips project, as you know, we've budgeted that over a couple of years. I'm working on contracting with a project manager and Shoreline Engineering on getting the engineering for that together. So over the winter, I'll be putting all that paperwork together and getting that out to bid, and then concurrently going to Corps of Engineers and Coastal Commission for the permits. So knock on wood, hopefully sometime maybe next spring, or maybe late winter, depending on how it goes. It should be a pretty simple project from a design standpoint. We'll be looking at rebuilding those slips. And I think I hit everything on my list.
Now, Eric, the $300,000 extra, that goes into our reserves. Is that correct?
Correct. The reserves, technically, it's called the Harbor Accumulation Fund. It's
right.
Basically our war chest of money right. to pull off of, yes.
Which basically, after the Beach Street project, we were pretty much in a zero mode, right?
Yeah, if you were to pull off the 500 and some odd thousand that we had earmarked for Beach Street, the 50 some thousand that's still earmarked for Boatyard,
right.
A few other items, yeah, we're pretty much tapped out. We're tapped out going into this budget year, so now we're starting to build that back up.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good. And we're not, as I said in the budget, there's still some line items I need to get up to finance and reconcile. There's some things that look a little funny that I need to make sure that they're accounted for correctly. And we're still working with a couple of our leaseholders on percent gross rents that were due back in July. So we'll be seeing a little bit more of a bump out of that. So,
Dana, you had a question? Neil?
Sorry, real fast. You just said you referenced $50,000 for the... for the haul out, is that for the feasibility study? Is that where the funds are?
Well, there's 15 years ago when that was a more active project, there was X amount of dollars put into it. And when we started back up as a Harbor Advisory Board and as a city in reinterest, when the Triangle lot came into view, which was what, maybe 2 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, there was a capital project that continued to carry on year after year, and it had about 60,000 in it. We spent 9,000 odd on RRM design for that mini master plan design. So there's about 50,000 left in it as a capital project. But that's where if we go forward with financial feasibility, that's where that would come from.
Dana?
Yeah, I just had a question. Have you heard any more about the wind farm possibilities? And has anybody talked to you? Is there anything you can tell us?
They are still moving forward. I had my the fall CMANC meeting, California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference meeting in Pismo a couple weeks ago. I am on that board of directors. We invited Alla Weinstein. She's the principal of that company. As you recall, she came and spoke to the city council and a couple times into the city. She came and spoke to see Mank, and the day she spoke was the day that BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, was closing the bid for that tract that they were interested in. So what happens with that project is Trident Winds applied to BOEM to lease, you know, whatever tracts those are called, numbers, that certain area, and federally they're required to then open that up to the public and see if anybody else is interested in developing that area. And that was the window that was open that was closing that day that she spoke to us. And I haven't heard since then, but they are still moving forward. I'm assuming nobody else came forward. But even if they did, then it becomes a competitive bid process. But then they'll be moving forward with submitting the full-on, more detailed plans and specifications to move that project forward. So they're still intending to keep it moving.
And the name of that firm, I'm...
Trident Winds.
Trident, yeah. Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
Thank
you. They've got a website. You can Google them and find them pretty easy.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Eric, are they still talking about 30 miles northwest?
Yeah, it's still out there in that kind of northwest, out in about 30 miles from here, not that far offshore if you go straight west from Cambria. It's maybe 20 some odd miles right straight off Cambria, yeah.
And then so I would assume then that they would use the plant facility to transmit their energy.
They're still proposing. I mean, that's the primary reason they're there, for the outfall access to shore, and also the switch yard to connect up to the grid.
Okay.
And that's it for me.
Did you have any numbers on rescues and reports for Harbor Patrol activity?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Been fairly quiet. I'm just trying to think back. We haven't had anything really terribly exciting, knock on wood. Mark Hammerdinger is probably the most excitement we've had around here in a long time, which is the way we like it. No excitement.
Then let's move on to our business items. C1, update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Dana?
Yes, after our last month's meeting, we pretty much batted it to staff, and so we're just looking for information from them.
So now, from my understanding, and I believe this is the date that creeps in my mind, is October 30th, you're going to have a RFP out there to the public. Is that a correct statement, Eric?
Your recommendation at the last meeting was to put out an RFQ.
Q, I mean.
Request for qualifications. I was going to say quotations, but.
Which should be a little bit less for you.
Yeah, it's basically any firms or entities or people out there interested in doing this thing. And so I'm currently working on putting that together. I'm certainly going to get with the ad hoc committee when I get a little further developed, and then on the side end or front end or back end, I'm not quite sure which end of it it's on, but on the rest of the city end, I've got to work with City Hall and trying to figure out how to move this thing forward. So, yeah, it's on my to-do list being worked on.
By October 30th.
Something like that.
Okay, thank you. Dana?
Yeah, that would be the end of my report. Looking forward to October 30th.
Update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. Neil?
We have not met, and I have nothing to report.
Update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Lynn?
Yes, we did have a meeting with Jean and Neil, myself, with Carissa Willits of the National Estuary Program, who is now in charge of eelgrass monitoring and the eelgrass projects. Carissa, K-A-R-I-S-S-A, Willits, W-I-L-L-E-T-S. She took over from Jennifer, which Jennifer was it? Jennifer Nix on eelgrass for the NEP. So when we last reported, we had a list of some dozen different projects that were going on with Cal Poly doing a number of them, the NEP doing some, and then the EPA awarding some money, as well as the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So what we got from Carissa today was mostly an update on what's been going on with these projects, and there has been considerable progress made. And I want to remind everybody, number one, the value of the eelgrass to the bay is significant. It is a basic organism that forms the basis of habitat for all kinds of species in the ecosystem of the bay. It is a protected organism that, as such, it impacts development as well as all the wildlife in the area. Development along the bay must always take into consideration any disturbance or any destruction of eelgrass, and it must be mitigated. The problems that have been going on is with the decrease in eelgrass in general, as well as the lack of the inability of the mitigation projects to be successful. They have, in general, all failed. There is no way to mitigate for eelgrass destruction. With no way to mitigate for eelgrass destruction, then, and no mitigation is proved, then, of course, no development can go on. And there are projects, I've been told, that are being held up because of this. It makes a very difficult situation for people who are investing or want to invest money and make improvements along the waterfront. The projects that are being carried on, there's obviously a good bit of overlap on them, but basically there are mapping, monitoring the extent of grass and the health of the grass, water quality, genetics, sediment coring. I think that sort of covers the various aspects of the projects. The mapping has been going on using sonar and people out actually on paddle boards and kayaks looking down through the water and counting and locating these little stems of shoots of eelgrass that are coming up in various areas. I should have put that out. The numbers on this chart show how eelgrass has been lost over the last 40 years, actually.
It's astonishing.
Yes, it is. In 1974, there were 452 acres, down to a low of 98 in 1997. And then in 2015, we're down to 13. Without the eelgrass, you don't have the nurseries for some fish and crabs, and I'm not sure what else. Oysters, perhaps. Brant geese can't survive. So you can see on this chart that it is rather astonishing. But back to the projects that are going on. in the mapping of the various areas, trying to figure out where it's growing, where it used to grow, and therefore where it's declining. The number 13 may not be quite as bleak as we thought, since they are seeing some shoots coming up in various areas that are apparently quite widespread. There's a decline in the algae that is a competitor for the eelgrass and the shoots coming up underneath that. They'll be monitoring studies comparing the actual numbers of the shoots and the length of the shoots. And all of these things are going to take, after they get the data, of course, a good bit of time in order to interpret the data. The water quality studies are having a bit of problem in that they do need more equipment, and they're trying to find some new equipment to do water quality studies. For the genetic studies, they have taken some 500 to 600 samples of eelgrass from various areas throughout the bay. And of course, once they have that, then the studies have to be done, and there will be a result on that sometime, perhaps in mid-2017. We don't know how that information will be disseminated. The fish trawl was one that was, I don't remember exactly when it was started, but it was the gathering of the data on the fish trawl was completed today. So that goes now into the next phase of compiling and interpreting all of the data. Fish trawling being when they actually take a boat out there and they skim the bottom of the bay and count everything that they pull up. And she said it's mostly snails, hundreds and hundreds of snails that they're counting. So that's sort of a summary of the various studies that is going on. If Neil or Jean want to add anything?
No. Thank you, Lynn.
Neil?
Yeah, we have a map up here, and the map right here shows the area that I guess the Harbor Advisory Board is probably most concerned with is the area of our waterfront. And as you'll see on the left or the west side of the bank there, you see those green patches. And then at the very bottom of the image, there's two different zones. And each of those zones are where the National Estuary Program is doing continued monitoring. They called it, I have the name written here somewhere, it's bed condition monitoring. So as Lynn was talking, they were going to be going back through and measuring how many plants and also the length of the plants. And there's, you know, one of the questions that we brought up is, even though we've all seen eelgrass on the west or the east side of the channel, none of it is showing up on that map. And they said that they're going to be changing some of their imaging methods. A lot of this was done by flyovers, with actual planes that fly over and can detect eelgrass. But they think they might be missing, you know, depending on when the plane flies over, the imaging might not be able to penetrate the water and get some of the more subtidal eelgrass measurements. So they're going to do a side scan sonar, which is basically through by a boat driving down the channel, and it can shoot sonar off to the sides and get more of the the eelgrass that's, you know, below the waterline, even at low tide. And so that map will continue to grow as they get data. And Gene also had some good input at the meeting today, in which he, you know, all the various studies that developments, as Lynn also was suggesting, all these developments that have been halted due to eelgrass and not being able to mitigate, they've all had to do eelgrass impact studies, and they've all done sampling of the eelgrass beds. So there's a little bit of changing of information. So now the NEP, I believe, is going to be contacting Tenera to hopefully they'll be able to share that data for scientific purposes, and that can go into the bank of knowledge for Morro Bay. So I think that's pretty much it.
So, Gene, you know, in the sense is that you're very familiar with probably the mitigation process or lack of it. Your project that you're working on, he did a study, from what I understand, and that study then allowed him to do his development. Is that correct?
on the Morro Bay Landing projects, yes, those studies have been ongoing since the very beginning. So we are in the process of, we were ahead of where they stopped doing the mitigation. So we're still under compliance.
I see. Okay.
But currently there are four or five projects on the books right now that are being processed for piling repairs and placement and things like that, which they all have to do studies. So hopefully that information will get up to the NEP, because each one of those locations can provide more information.
Okay. Yeah, Neil.
And one more thing that Lynn touched on is we don't know when the information is going to come back on all of this research, for example, the genetic testing, but everybody is chomping at the bit with the NEP and Cal Poly as well for this data. And it's pretty exciting actually to know that of the every proposal that was put forward by Cal Poly was funded. So you had 100% funding for all of the work that they wanted to do, which is, I think of as rare. So, but it's also exciting to know that this data is coming, and I think it's going to help go towards benefiting the city eventually when it can give, hopefully, aid and with the Army Corps and Department of Fish and Wildlife, if they're able to use some of this data for our bay specifically, might be able to speed up some of their thought process of we're able to get back into being able to do mitigation or some project like that.
And then you might mention that the state has just passed the legislation.
Oh, Senate bill.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the Senate Bill 1363 has passed, but we're not sure, and neither is NEP sure exactly how that's going to start rolling out. It's got funds available for research geared towards eelgrass, and so hopefully, you know, maybe we could be a spearhead for people to use the fund, but we'll need to do some more research on that and try and interface with the senator's office, Senator Monning's office is who wrote that bill. So hopefully that'll be a benefit to the city of Morro Bay as well.
I think the number with all of these projects, it's about $142,000 that they're putting into the study of eelgrass. And this is before Senator Monning's bill and the additional funds that that may provide.
And that doesn't include any of the private funds that have been spent by businesses hoping to develop.
Right.
Each of those projects, I think, were, if not in the six figures, they were just shy of it.
So looking at that graph there in 1997, was there anything unusual in 1997 when it went down to 91 acres in the sense of a drought? Or I mean, I don't remember. I mean, I'm just kind of curious. The
feeling
that's,
seems
that's
to be
a big question,
nobody
yeah.
can nobody's sure.
Nobody knows.
Nobody's known.
I'm sure they must have looked at very obvious factors such as we had the rains of 94, heavy rains after several years of drought, and that didn't seem to have any significant
impact
on it.
Probably taken a little bit of time, too.
Well, true, but it, I mean, a year or two, you would expect something, wouldn't you? That was in 90, let's see, in 95, 260, it was
right.
down, but the previous count was in 88, so that's rather a long lapse. And then it continued to decline from 95 to 97, went from 260 to 98, so down more than 60-70%.
Didn't we have a lot of rain in 97?
The big rainy year was 95-96.
Yeah.
That was that miracle March.
I had
the same
March
thought.
I know
the NEP, some of the folks think it may be drought-related because it needs fresh water. And
that was
that graphic showed, what, 97?
Yeah.
Where it was down low. So you think, yeah, it might be a year lag. And 95-96 winter was when that drought finally ended. And that was, what, 3 or 4 years? It wasn't as bad as this one we're in now.
And the most recent decline started in 2007. And because of that decline, that's when Cal Poly and the NEP all started refocusing on this current issue from 2007 till now. So if you could look at that graphic, it's the last data set's 2007, then to 2015.
So you have the tsunami written in
there
somewhere.
Yeah.
Something happened.
Right. Okay.
It's quite fascinating, and you're absolutely right, and I hope they can get a little handle. You did mention a little bit of glimmer of hope that there might be a little bit more acreage than really what they think right now. So.
But we don't know whether this is a cyclical, a yearly cyclical, or just short in the, you know, the shoots are starting to shoot up, and maybe by next year they won't be there or they will be there. We don't know yet.
Yeah. Okay.
But the other thing about the eelgrass, it's declining not only here in Morro Bay, but worldwide.
Right.
So, for whatever that means.
Right. Okay, thank you, Lynn. That was a great report. And Gene and Neil, thank you also for your input. Next would be the update from the Marine Sanctuaries Ad Hoc Committee. Both Ron and Alan are not here. I believe Ron is the chair, and I'm also on that committee, and I think that's a... we really don't have anything to discuss right now. So C5, which is the consideration of a definition of designation as it pertains to a Morro Bay working waterfront, and consideration of what waterfront areas should be considered as Morro Bay's working waterfront. So that's what we're going to discuss tonight. And Eric, why don't you start off a little bit of how you'd like to present this, and then we'll have public comment, and then take it back to the board, please.
Yeah, thank you. So I've created a rather spiffy, if I do say myself, PowerPoint to get through the staff report here. So a little bit of background going past the last meeting. The council adopted Harbor Advisory Board goal. Going through the goal setting earlier this year was create a working waterfront policy for Morro Bay and pursue quote-unquote working waterfront designations or guidelines. The work plan elements that we created and approved were research working waterfronts or designation guidelines and other information pertinent to Morro Bay for consideration of a policy and possible designation. That was to happen in quarter one of the fiscal year, which is what we did at the last meeting, essentially. Item two, develop draft Morro Bay working waterfront policy for city council consideration. That's in the upcoming quarter. And then item three, pursue Morro Bay working waterfront designation or recognition if applicable. So that's kind of the background of how we got here. As you know, at the last Harbor Advisory Board meeting in September, after a lot of good work by Ron Reisner and Gene, and I believe Dana's the other member. Yeah, Dana on the ad hoc committee. The ad hoc committee basically came to sort of a screeching halt, saying there's two pretty critical things we need here before we can move forward. Otherwise, we're wasting our time, and we think we need to ask the city council this. And the two things were, HAB needs the city council's definition of quote-unquote designation as it applied to working waterfront policy project. What does designation mean? We'll get into that here in a minute. And the second question is the HAB needs assistance from the city council in identifying what lands, I'm assuming waters, because obviously a waterfront includes land and water, what lands and waters are to be included in a quote-unquote working waterfront definition, as well as what land use activities within those lands are to be considered in defining Morro Bay's working waterfront. So having painstakingly gone back through all those meetings with the city council and the joint HAB council meeting and the city council meetings, talking to some key folks involved with the process, what staff came to determine was the city council's looking for us, looking for the Harbor Advisory Board to answer those questions, not the other way around. And so that's what I've brought back to you tonight is let's look at those two questions ourselves as a Harbor Advisory Board and make a recommendation on how we think it should move forward, and then we'll bring that to the city council basically for ratification, assuming they say, okay, yes, that's what we want to do. Then we can enable the ad hoc committee to keep moving forward. Because the committee rightly pointed out that if you do a bunch of work and let's say you designate a certain area, the working waterfront, and you come up with some recommendations and you go back to the city council and the city council says, well, no, we don't want to look there. We want to look over there. We waste a bunch of time. So we definitely don't want to do that. So I kind of call it the create your own adventure process. Basically, we'll start with defining what areas we think the working waterfront should be, and we'll start with figuring out what designation should be and make a recommendation to council and then see where they take it from there. So that's where we are tonight. So for item number one, I'll go through both questions here, and then we can open up to the board any public comment, and you guys can just bat it around and we'll figure out where we want to go with it. So basically three sort of alternatives, and these aren't by any means the do-all be-all. These are just the three that come immediately to mind. And in terms of a designation of a working waterfront in Morro Bay, what should designation mean? Should it mean that we, the city of Morro Bay, self-designate some or all of our waterfront as a quote-unquote working waterfront and leave it at that? In other words, a statement, this is what we are. carrying it to the next level. Do we want to self-designate some or all of our waterfront in that same manner, but then pursue follow-on policies, zoning, land, water use implementation strategies, measures? Do we want to, you know, get the fishing community sustainability plan, those sorts of things, and try and implement things through this process? And then the third item, do we want to seek some sort of outside working waterfront designation, recognition, certification? Is there some, you know, like LEED, you know, in the building trades, you can get LEED certification by doing certain things and committing to certain standards. Is that exist somewhere out there in the greater public? It doesn't appear to be from the research the ad hoc committee's done so far, but it may be possible that still does exist out there, so do we want to do that? From the standpoint of a menu to choose from, A and B are sort of what I would call a succession of choices, meaning one is a little, A is a little, and B is a little more. C is could be done concurrently or exclusive of A and B, so those are sort of the directions I see going forward with the designation part. Definition of designation. Moving on to the working waterfront itself, what does the working waterfront entail? Does it entail the Measure D area only, basically the commercial recreational fishing zone, or does it entail the entirety of our developed waterfront, which really is from Coleman Beach, you know, the power plant intake property all the way down through the Inn at Morro Bay? Sort of sub areas in that zone are the Beach Street, Embarcadero to Beach Street North zone, which is the Measure D area. On the Embarcadero from Beach Street to Tidelands Park, the launch ramp area, that's pretty much the core of our lease site zone. And these zones are sort of spelled out in our lease management policy in terms of how we manage the leases there. That's sort of another, our main tourist and visitor serving zone through there. And then from Tidelands Park South, where we don't own the land, we own the water only, and it's water only leases. So there's another sort of zone, I guess, all the way down to the, well, we don't have any developed leases past the old fuel dock. There are water leases on through Bayshore Bluffs Park and the Inn at Morro Bay and then State Park Marina, which is an animal in and of itself. So that's sort of the Measure D, or the three different zones. I know in my staff report in item number two, I stated in there should B or C be the recommended area of consideration. Well, there is no C. That was a typo in there when I had a different item on there. So there really only are two different sort of zones I looked at there. And it's
so that should be A and B, or A or B?
It should just be B. Should B be the recommended area of consideration? Currently, waterfront is divided into three distinct areas. So A is really the Measure D area only.
Gotcha.
B encompasses Measure D here. So what I'm recommending tonight is take input, discuss the different issues at play here, and consider definition and the areas of consideration through the questions posed by the ad hoc committee, and then take some specific action, meaning a motion or motions to recommend to the City Council to ratify the HAB's findings, the Harbor Advisory Board's findings, or conclusions that we come to tonight, and then we'll take those back to the Council and see if we can get their stamp of approval, and that will enable the ad hoc committee and HAB to continue working productively forward, knowing that the council is, you're moving in a direction the council wants you to be moving. So with that, can open up to public comment or questions or?
Well, I think we want to open up the public comment right now first. Is that correct? Eric?
Up to you.
Yeah, let's do public comments.
Okay.
For right this minute, or yeah, Bill,
okay.
Come on up.
Sure.
State your name and your concept. And
good evening, Bill Martini, Morro Bay. Actually, it's a little tough without having discussion on, you know, what your ideas are to make public comment, but I'll make a few. And that is, originally the entire Embarcadero was your working waterfront. You had Sylvester's, you had your boat works, you had the machine shops. Everything was on the Embarcadero until it slowly turned from working waterfront. Well, it was a combination of both. And then it was designated in 1964 by Joe Giannini that Measure D was going to be exclusive for, you know, fishing and nothing but, you know, dedicated to the commercial fishermen and fishing industry. And, of course, that has since been kind of watered down over the years and businesses have crept in. And then south of Tidelands Park, where, you know, I'm located, and there's still a boatyard down there, that was, the zoning was changed. Now I'm talking about the land zoning, and I know the harbor advisory is strictly from the boat launch south is in the water. You know, that's just the water zoning as opposed to the land zoning. But the land zoning there was changed in 1982. Prior to 1982, I believe it was zoned industrial, which that's where the oyster cannery, the boat yard, and all the different developments, the grocery store was there. In 1982, they changed that, and they stated that the existing businesses above the bluff, which is now zoned residential R1, the old cannery building, grocery store, et cetera, were grandfathered in, but no new commercial uses were allowed, and any commercial was below the bluff. It's like a little 50-foot strip that's still zoned waterfront commercial down there. About 70% of that right now has turned to residential. You have the Cobes, a couple homes on the waterfront, 10 foot off the water. The Myers have two homes. We have the cannery building that's 95% zoned residential there, and then the boathouse is zoned residential. The old coffee shop and that, you know, down at the fuel dock has actually been converted residential, even though that's actually on a water lease site, and then a couple other have been converted residential. Not sure if they're legal or not, but, you know, they have been converted residential. The point I'm making is that area is from Tidelands Park South. It's stated that it's supposed to be primarily for recreational and non-commercial fishing, where fishing, they wanted it concentrated at the northern end in Measure D. In fact, Sylvester's Tug originally was located, the stockings were just north of the inn at Morro Bay is where the tug operation was. And in the 60s, when they moved, they had to move because they had to move them out of the residential area down there onto the Embarcadero, which again now has been turned into a motel. So I guess what I was doing was laying the groundwork on south of Tidelands Park. It's truly only water only. We've had a proposal personally for years to do mariculture in the water down there. So, I mean, it is a commercial use, but it's not a fishing, you know, the commercial fishing is in the Coastal Act, and that is supposed to be designated along the Embarcadero, but primarily at the northern end. So I just kind of wanted to lay some of the groundwork prior to hearing your comments on the zonings and the original intent. And I think probably the main important thing is to stress that Measure D was always supposed to be totally dedicated to the commercial fishing industry. And that probably really needs to be protected and also dedicated to that use. The Embarcadero is pretty much a done deal. In our area, it's pretty well, most of the waterfront of there is developed into residential. So just more or less for information at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
So let's bring it back and maybe ask any questions that we have of Eric or discuss our thoughts on this, Gene.
Well, we have had no ad hoc committee meeting together, but we have all talked to Ron and or emailed with Ron, and then I spoke with Eric a couple times. And these are just kind of basically my feelings here. The Morro Bay working waterfront is made up of people. It's the people that to do the work, and both men and women working, actually doing things, whether it's commercial fishing, or somebody cleaning off the bottom of a boat, or a salesperson selling a t-shirt at a gift shop. They are people working on our waterfront. This working aspect is throughout the waterfront, and it's from Coleman Beach to Fairbanks Point, and it's the life of Morro Bay. It's the movement of Morro Bay. It's dynamic, it's alive, it's changing. It's what our community is made of on the waterfront. The three districts that Eric was referring to, they have their general use in a like kind, like commercial fishing more or less is in the north. We have the shopping in the middle and the recreation on the south there. But among all those three districts, we have men and women doing things that are different than what they're supposed to be at that area there. We've got fish unloading behind a dolphin shirt company. We've got restaurants up in the by the North Tee Pier. We've got cranes down in, you know, Associated Divers area. Those things are what keep the Morro Bay waterfront alive and moving. And I'm all favor for that. That's what, it's always changing. Who would have thought 10 years ago that there'd be so many paddleboard people on the waterfront? It's this kind of life that keeps Morro Bay active and alive. The designation of a Morro, a working waterfront should be incorporated in the general plan update. However, I don't think it should become part of any zoning regulation or policy. If we do so and make it a zoning regulation, as things change, then we'll have to either change the zoning or we have existing non-conforming uses, which just kind of screws everything all up. So I'd just say that we designate our whole entire waterfront as a working waterfront, and then we maybe we categorize certain uses. Commercial fishery, sport fishing, industrial, you know, rentals, kayaks, restaurants. Do it that way, and then if the city wants to define it further, that's up to the council to do. So that's my ideas. I would be opposed to making it a particular zone instrument.
Okay, Jean. Lynn?
As I was reading back through some of the information that we had from August 30th, the reports that were done by the ad hoc committee, or the information that we were given, I started to see this a little bit differently, and maybe we need the, and seeing it as a working waterfront designation to reinforce in part the idea or of Measure D, since there have been certain modifications made and it in some of the businesses there. And hearing Mr. Martoni's history, which it was very interesting, thank you, and seeing how some of the other business areas have now been converted to homes, perhaps this could be a useful concept that we do keep it within, or at least help define what we want in various areas. Protecting the commercial fishing area, I think, is primary. That is going to, I'm sure, receive a whole lot more pressure for perhaps more lucrative businesses that want to move in, and the fishermen could easily lose out despite Measure D. Measure D might need some help in that area. But also to foreclude any more businesses being converted to residential areas and thus keep the citizens off the waterfront.
Neil?
I think the land trust, the rules of the land trust prohibit any residential on the waterfront.
Except that there are places now converted to homes that not too long ago, even in my memory, were businesses, business locations, and were commercial locations.
And they're within the trust? They're within the?
No.
No.
So they're?
But just looking at the entire waterfront.
Okay.
Is all I was
I got
saying.
You. So, I mean, I agree in the discussion of Gene and the thought of the waterfront being people and working, I fully agree with that, and I think that's the beautiful thing about Morro Bay is all the diversity of business that happens from the rock to the back of the estuary where I am. And there, you know, there's kayak shacks and diverse businesses that all satisfy different needs or based on, you know, supply and demand. I am concerned with this just because I don't know enough about it, is the truth. So to start writing policy or recommending that policy be made, I agree with Gene to not necessarily start writing policy or changing zoning. I'm not saying that couldn't be done. As I have been thinking about this. I wonder if there's a possibility to have somewhat of a pilot program, pilot zone, where, and just because I don't know how other programs have worked, if once Morro Bay is designated as a working waterfront, if you're allowed to kind of phase in zones and maybe it starts in Measure D and then grows into the other areas, or if that's counterproductive, I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas to, you know, maybe start to incorporate it and make sure that we don't get ahead of ourselves when we just cast the big net over Morro Bay and jump all in and then have any regrets from that. I'm not sure what the full ramifications are of taking on this classification. So those are my concerns, I guess.
So Dana?
Yeah, when we started this ad hoc committee, it was because we were looking at, we've been talking about this working waterfront issue for quite a while. And the problem is, throughout the United States, we're losing it. It is the people here that create the working waterfront, but if Neil's lease had been given away to a restaurant or anything else, then he wouldn't have been able to go in there. And without those designations, it's just going to go away. We just heard history, and we all know it very well. The Sylvester's used to be right next to the yacht club. Gunther's used to be right in the middle of the Embarcadero, where we're calling the heart of the Embarcadero nowadays, not too far from Centennial Stairway and all of that area. There was a boatyard. There's a big empty lot right across the street of it still today underneath the Blue Sail Inn. And it was up and down the Embarcadero, and it is slowly going away, and we're going to lose it if we don't stop that. So somewhere along the line, something has to happen here. When we first started this ad hoc committee, we looked into it, and I was talking to Ron, and he's just like, this is huge, and it is. It is a big thing. We're not going to make major decision here tonight. I can't see that happening. My tendency is to go towards B. The designation should mean the city of Morro Bay self-designates some or all of its waterfront, a working waterfront, and then follow up with something, policies, if there's zoning and other land water use implementation strategies and or measures. If we just kind of let it go free flow, it sounds nice, but we have that problem right now with Measure D. There's all kinds of things going on in Measure D area, and we all let them go on, and they have been since it was started. It has never been just Measure D there. So if we can exist that way, that's a wonderful thing, that we can all just get along. But somebody, all they have to do is bring it up and bring it to a meeting and continue on with it, or lawsuits or whatever. I don't want to see that to happen, but I'm just saying we need to protect our waterfront a little more vigorously than just hoping that it's okay. Otherwise, businesses will not be able to come in. They won't even be attracted if they don't think that they can fit there. It's just, if it just goes wide open to hotels and floating cottages or whatever else, we're going to lose our working waterfront. We've got a wind farm possibility. Where are they going to park with their work boats? We have work boats right now on the T Pier. It's Measure D area. It's fishermen. We got the Coast Guard, we got the Harbor Patrol, we got San Salvador, we got all kinds of stuff. It's all Measure D. So how does that all fit in that box? I mean, I'm glad it does. We all love it, but we need to really get some of that back or we're going to lose it. And that's my opinion.
So couple questions that I would like to clarify, because I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think we're going to be able to make any major decision tonight. I mean, this is a big, big project. But there's commercial fishing boats down by your office, Gene, correct? Yeah. So my question to you, if we do just commercial fishing in north of the Beach Street and we tell these commercial fishermen they have to move, is there enough space for all the commercial fishermen? I mean, you know, just like what we did with Sylvester's, where he had to move to where he was before. You know what I'm trying to say? So, I mean, I just don't, you know, there's little pockets of commercial activities going on all the way down from Shasta, which we, if we're going to make policy not to ever have that go away, we need to either grandfather those things in there, and the existing facilities would need to exist, and that if anything else wanted to come in there, they would have to be that type of business. I mean, that's, if we want to maintain it, I mean. Lynn?
Yes, the way I read Measure D is dedicated to commercial fishing. That does not say commercial fishing operations cannot be in other areas.
Correct. Yeah.
So, but you're not, there would be no reason to have to force those people up right. to Measure D area.
I was just making a point. I mean, I'm not saying that's okay. what I want to do.
No, I mean, I'm sure you well, wouldn't want to do
for,
that.
For instance,
I don't think that would even
yeah, Associated Pacific, of course. Okay, they're a construction company. They're right there in the Embarcadero, right next to hotels. What happens if they decided they want to move? And so that lease site goes out for bid. So, you know, I mean, that's the, if we want to try to create the working waterfront, will we ever get another construction company to come in there?
That's the diversity I like to see. You know, and I'm all in favor of Measure D. What Dana says, I'm completely behind him there. I'd like to see commercial D upheld as best as we possibly can in realistic terms. But I like the diversity of things going to different places, different things happening. That's what makes it interesting. So
that would have to be some type of zoning, and we'd have to take the whole from Coleman Beach all the way down to...
But if you take individual lease sites and say, okay, that's going to be a commercial fishing here because it's always been, or this is industrial because it's always been industrial, that's called spot zoning. And planners don't like to do spot zoning.
The big difference between waterfront is it doesn't expand so much unless we dig a big basin in the power plant property or something. It doesn't expand like, you know, we take some farmland and bring it into the city, and then you can keep going with more of the city, or you know, you just have county property or whatever. You're so limited, and that's the problem they're seeing, is it's just going away. As soon as there's a downturn in fishing or other water-related industry, and then condos show up, or in our town, it'd be more like hotels, you don't get that back. It's done. Nobody's going to give that back. So, I think it is important to, planners may not like spot zoning in some areas, but in this situation, I think you need to either have a designation of a percentage of the waterfront, so that you're not necessarily spotting it, but it's like if something leaves, it can't be filled in with something else that's unrelated, or it can be traded for another property. Maybe that's a situation that could happen with the use of a percentage of your businesses, but you just don't want to see it go away.
When we talk about definitions, we have to be careful of what we determine what the definition is, because we don't know what's going to happen in another 10 years. We may have whole different uses that we hadn't considered yet. So, and the wind farm is an excellent example. You know, I'm all excited about that project.
Yeah, that could be like what the power plant used to be for us. You know, kept bills paid.
So when you read the paper, Ron said something, and I think this was brought up in our last meeting, that in Florida, the working waterfront was designated, and it was just a bunch of hotels. How do I'm just, which goes to your line of thinking of it's people. It doesn't really matter what you do, but they're all working there on the waterfront. In this case, it's all hotels. So I don't understand how they're getting away with it. Is it just for tourism slogan?
Well, what I'm thinking about in categorizing different terms of maybe we can have tiers. You know, commercial fishing is tier one, tier two is sport fishing, and do it that way, and then there's a, I don't know, some kind of hierarchy somehow. So.
But in the state of Florida, when you did you guys study that or look at it? I mean, what was their rationale of being able to...
Tourism is their big industry, whereas you go to Maine and fishing is more their big industry, and that's why they... Fishing is number one as far as their working waterfront is concerned. Both of them have marinas and infrastructure for boating is involved in both of those, in both of their working waterfronts.
So how would we like to go? We would like to just kind of table this until another, or make some type of recommendation that we want to actually include, as staff alluded to, the whole area as a working waterfront, and that it is diverse, and that we are going to, that's our plan.
If we go with recommendation B,
right,
that is a really big item. And I don't know whether we're in, have the ability to set zone issues. Policies, yes. Land use, maybe. Water use, yes. But zoning is a whole different item there.
Well, I don't think it would be us. It would be that we would be recommending this to the city of Morro Bay.
Bill, can I bring up a few,
yeah,
few points?
I'm sorry, Eric.
So I got a few things, and there, I should have jotted down some notes to keep track of them. Hopefully I'll remember. So if you go to your page 2 of the staff report at the very top, second paragraph down, when I was reviewing all the videos and whatnot, Mayor Irons, when he stated during the process of putting this working waterfront item on the work plan, and this is a quote, using resources such as Measure D, the National Working Waterfront Network, and CMAQ to research and bring to council a draft policy of what a working waterfront is, and further to put together working waterfront guidelines, and whether it becomes a policy or some other guiding document can evolve. So it's clearly evident that that this was going to be a work in progress and taken in steps, and not something we're just going to jump right into and kind of see what it turns into as it evolves. So I don't think, and then the ad hoc committee with their recommendations on answering those two questions. And in talking to Ron, you know, the second question, he said, what areas and zones are we going to be considered our working waterfront? And a subheader under that, what uses are we going to consider under those? Well, I think the uses thing can come later. And that does bring up a lot of sticky questions. And if you define, you know, six uses, what happens when the seventh use comes along? And you don't have it defined in putting yourself into a box. But I don't think we need to go there tonight. I think if we to keep the ad hoc committee moving forward and not waste anybody's time, try and get a designation in terms of what area we think should be the working waterfront. I think that's the first step. In terms of Measure D and Sylvester's and all, and the boatyard and all the other things, when we had that planning commission meeting where they considered Measure D, I went on at length about Measure D and how it's been interpreted and how we try to manage it. What cannot be forgotten is in all these uses, and I'll use the old boatyard when Ralph Gunther had it last before he sold it to the Steinmans and they redeveloped it. You can't force a use or an activity in somewhere if it's not financially viable. And Ralph Gunther made a decision, a business decision, to get out of the boatyard business for whatever reason. Sure, the city could have said, nope, sorry, Ralph, you're only going to be able to continue building a boatyard here and operate a boatyard here. He may have just walked away. Who knows? But that was a business decision of his. Sylvester's. Yeah, Sylvester's had a tugboat landing. Well, the tankering went away. And they tried to do the cruise ship. Remember they had the Colleen, the old platform crew boat? They tried to make a run at that. Didn't do any good at it. And eventually their business dried up and they went away and they sold to Ken Scott and he developed a hotel. Well, that wasn't because... It was a business decision. Yeah, we could have tried to say, well, no, this thing's only going to, this use is historically was a working boat, tugboat platform. And you can only do that here. Well, you got to have somebody to do it. Same with commercial fishing on Measure D. We fought for a while trying to keep that dock occupied, as you remember. We had the fishermen's organization renting it for $1 a year. And then we had Brett Cunningham come in, and I think it was $500 or $600 a year, basically a giveaway rent to try and keep the commercial fishing landing alive there. Geo's kept it going down at the other end, but he's on Old Pipkin lease, so he's got a pretty darn low rent. So in a way, it's subsidized. So until you want to talk about potential of subsidizing something to keep a use there that may not be economically viable, because as you're kind of getting at, there's pressure for a landowner to do what's most productive from a revenue standpoint, and that can turn into hotels and other uses.
Yeah, as a contractor, I look at a piece of property and I look at how it's zoned and what I can put on there, what fits that box. If I came in and just said, okay, I'm going to buy this, and then I said, hey, you know, I need to build two houses on this R1 lot. That's the only way it's going to make any money. That's not doable. You can't do that. And I'd say the same thing with the property that Neil has, that his lease is. If that had gone up to something because there was nothing else there at the moment, and it got filled with a non-Measure D thing, and then he's looking for a place, there's nothing available. And so you lose out. I think you have to stick to that. I think the zoning is important. Otherwise, it's wide open. You just buy stuff and then work my way in here. Hey, I can't make any money. You got to let me do this. You got to let me do that. I don't think the city is necessarily, that's what they're supposed to be doing, is making sure everybody can make a living at their lease site. I mean, if they come into it and they think they can do it, pull it off, well, that's great. But I don't think you should change the rules to make it happen. I think that's my point.
I don't disagree. I think, you know, in terms of Neil's site or Bob Fowler's site, the economies of recreational fishing changed. Verge is a sort of a special case with what happened with the company, and it's hard to kind of track and make sense of that from a financial standpoint. There was business decisions made there that separated the business from the waterfront, and it turned into something completely different. But the economies of the recreational fishing industry changed. In terms of Mr. Fowler's landing there, he's doesn't have Verges there anymore, just because of the breakup of Verges, for lack of a better word. He's got Patriot Sport Fishing in there, and a couple of other folks that come in on contract basis. You still got a recreational fishing landing there. And you've still got a tackle shop. And yeah, and this is where the criticism comes far and wide, and everybody's a critic about you allowed a kayak thing in there, you allowed this, you allowed that in there. Well, you still got the core thing, and the primary revenue from that site is recreational fishing with the landing in the shop. Yeah, he's had to put in a kayak and some stand-up rentals to make ends meet. And that's just how it was. And you've got, Neil's place, which was Chuck Marcial and MM Refrigeration before that, where he, back in the day, was mostly a work on boats guy and did machine shop and refrigeration, all kinds of work, and probably worked on land a little less. And as the economies of that changed, he flipped that around and he wasn't working on boats so much anymore and did a lot of land use stuff. But we didn't kick him out because of that. And then Neil comes along. Had Neil not come along and had Chuck just gone up and sold it, and somebody come in and proposed, you know, hey, it's not economically feasible to do this Measure D thing anymore. I'm going to do a hotel or landing. We wouldn't have allowed it, flat out. But with the existing people that have come in and bought those properties and operated them, we've tried as best we can to hold to Measure D while still allowing for it to be economically viable. And if that means subsidizing, which it can be, you know, we did that on the fish dock for a long time, and they're finally turned it back around. Brett did pretty good, and a lot of it was the regulatory regime that hit the industry hard, and the economic downturn hit the industry hard. That was certainly a big factor, but a lot of it was also it just wasn't economically viable for a major fish buyer to be here. Well, that changed when Brett built that back up, and Santa Monica Seafood came in and bought it, and then Central Coast Seafood bought it, and then Santa Monica. So that's turned around. They've still got a pretty good lease in there. It's I wouldn't call it subsidized, but it's like it was when Brett Cunningham was there. But we're seeing better revenue out of there, more fair market revenue out of there, even though it's still in the Measure D zone, and Bob Fowler as well. And I think the city, if you, for Measure D, for commercial recreational fishing, because it can be, you know, the margins can be so slim and it can be so up and down, the city's got to be willing to consider, I guess for lack of a better word, again, subsidizing those types of uses. You know, Bob right now, he's building a bunch of slips. The cost to do that means he's got to charge 13, 14, 15 bucks a foot, which commercial fishermen aren't going to pay because they're going to wait to get our slips. And so do we want to give them a break on rent to attract those kind of people in to keep the fishermen there? Well, maybe that's what you got to consider. Another factor with GAFCO and Harbor Hut, the existing businesses were in there when Measure D was enacted, they are allowed to stay. We probably should as a city, if we want to turn more of that Measure D zone over to commercial recreational fishing, think about not renewing those leases if that's the direction we really want to go. Is there anybody, and I'm kind of getting off in the weeds here, is there anybody knocking on our door to come in and do some Measure D compliant thing in there? Well, I don't have any fish buyers coming in. Would they come? I don't know. You know, there's only a certain amount of product to come across the docks in between Santa Monica and Geo's. They've I think can handle most of it. And Tognazini's, they handle a lot of it. So, you know, Tognazini's another one. You know, it started as a building. We had two businesses fail in, two Measure D compliant businesses attempt to go in, Central Coast Seafood, and I forget the other one, and they failed. And that little building was empty for a long time. So Tognazini came along and proposed bringing in a fish case, and yeah, I've got to do some seafood sales on the side to make it happen, and we allowed it. Well, there's critics that say we shouldn't have done that. But given who Mr. Tognazini is and what he's doing, the amount of fish that goes across his dock, I think he's pretty darn Measure D compliant. So I guess I'll get off my high horse and stop sort of defending how we've managed Measure D. We've tried to make it work from a regulatory standpoint and from a financial standpoint. So, and then going back to the rest of the waterfront, yeah, we used to have a lot of more working, hands-on, blue-collar stuff going on, and it's changed. But I think that's largely because of the financials and the business aspect of it, not because we've forced it out to try and get in retail and restaurant and everything else. Those are business decisions that the leaseholders made. And I had another great point, but I completely lost it.
I have another question.
Yeah, Dana.
Eric,
thank you, Eric.
Have you had any talks with, anybody like a consultant or anybody as far as C on item one here, the designation, and possibly someone else working with us on this, or because you were talking about you could do this at the same time we do either A or B, was a staff recommendation here.
Yeah, I have spoken to Henry with Lisa Wise Consulting. He's actually on the board of the National Working Waterfronts Network.
Right.
So that may be an avenue to pursue, kind of tapping better into the, you know, hire some professional consultancy to come in and help us with this process. I think we can start, and I'll try and get back, and maybe this is the point I want to get back to keep us from going off in too many directions or down too many rabbit holes. I think figuring out what we want to consider to be our working waterfront is number one, and get that back to the council so the council can you know, agree or disagree or whatever, but get in front of the council to get sort of ratification so that we know what area we're talking about. Definition, or designation, I'm sorry, what does the term designation mean? I think we can come up with something here tonight as well, A, B, C. It sounds like B seems to be the way to go in terms of follow-on policy zoning, and that's kind of speaks to what Mayor Iron said. We can put together these things and develop potential policy and other guiding documents as they evolve and as we discover more about this process. So I don't think we're trying to start making policy or want to put some guidelines in place at this point. Way too premature for that. I think we want to figure out what our area is. We want to call a working waterfront, and then figure out which of the buffet-style things here we want to pursue, what direction we think we want to go. I think Ron, in another one of his recommendations that he made as part of the committee on the materials he submitted before, he said that, recommending the city council create a working waterfront policy development task force, which includes members from council, administration, planning. I think Gene made a point earlier, this process certainly needs to work in concert with and feed into the general plan, local coastal plan process as it starts developing, because it is policy guidance. And I think this is a great opportunity to sort of sub policy out the waterfront, the working waterfront element, into that document and feed into that document. And that may be ultimately what it comes to, is we come up with something that feeds into that process, and then it becomes memorialized in that process with the professional consultancy they're doing.
Well, one of the things is that we're going through with this general plan here that we've embarked on, we're in the first year of 3 years, as you well know, Eric, is that the city is wants the input. I mean, this is the time to do it. Next Wednesday night, they're going to talk about the Embarcadero. I mean, people should be there, the voice, or at least someone should be there. We want a working waterfront. That's what we want to designate. We want the zoning to be this and to make sure that it stays in existence. And that's where it's going to stay, I mean, on the general plan. I mean, I'm involved in a little group called, you know, I mean, I'm not on a high horse, Morro Bay Open Space Alliance, trying to create a green belt here in Morro Bay. Well, we're involved in the general plan to make sure that general plan encompasses buffer zones, encompasses, you know, areas so that, because there's a lot of things going on, not just in the Embarcadero. You know, Chevron property is for sale. So there's a lot of things that we have to get involved in the general plan, and so does the, you know, the working waterfront needs to be involved in the general plan area. Next Wednesday night's a good example. And that needs to be put into the planners, which Scott Graham is holding. And he's taking input from the public. And then it's going to become policy. So that's, I think, definitely whatever we come out with tonight, we should actually try to have somebody there. I will be there next Wednesday night. That this needs to be included.
Probably what we ought to do, and I'm gone most of next week down at Harbor Masters Conference. If we come up with a definitive recommendation, and I'll let you guys take it where we want to go with it, it may be we come up with if we make a recommendation, we memorialize that. Just like, you know, you've signed a couple letters to send up to City Council, we memorialize that and ship that off to that group that's doing that. That's the way they've got something in hand.
Oh, Neil?
In reference to my business and the spot that I'm in now, when I first started looking, I couldn't even tell you because it's been years that I've been looking up and down the waterfront. And, you know, was the aquarium going to become available? That was years out. Was Bob Fowler's place going to be available? It was really hard to find a place. And so for years, we kind of endured doing business the way we did with being closed with rainfall closures. And I was able to get my foot in the door and kind of just was in the right place at the right time and found, you know, Chuck had some dock space that I was able to put a little nursery on, and my nursery then turned into the option of buying the building. And had I not already been there, it might have just snuck right by me. And so I think we shouldn't sell Morro Bay short. Like Dana was saying, it is amazing real estate. And I think that if people, you know, businesses also, business ideas come and go daily. You know, people change their mind, they go in a different direction, and it evolves. It's a living, breathing thing. And just because today a business might not want to go into a place and there might not be something available, in a few days or weeks, maybe somebody sparks an idea and finally gets the funding and gets their partners together, and now they can do a business that might be marine-related or not. That being said, businesses aren't guaranteed to survive. And my business might not survive, but for now, I'm working in Measure D in my zone, and we're hoping to. But part of what I'm trying to do with my business is to give what I would like to do is, and what I think that the tourists who come to this town would like, is an experience. And I think on our waterfront, we have the opportunity to give people an experience. And that experience isn't just coming to Morro Bay and just coming to Morro Bay Oyster Company. It's, you know, I want a tourist to come to Morro Bay and say that they didn't even get to the south side of town because they spent the first day exploring the rock in the north side of town. And we have that opportunity, and that's rare. Not every town can boast that. They have that potential, I'll say. And so when you think of that, like Gene was saying, that the waterfront's made up of working people, that's, I think, comprised of a variety of experiences that they need on the waterfront. You know, Morro Bay is built a lot around tourism, but the tourism, we need the commercial fishing for that experience as well. So there's got to be a balance to where, you know, we coexist and realize that we both benefit each other. I think, you know, it might be easy for commercial fishermen to say that, you know, they don't really need the tourists, but at the same time, a lot of the dollars that they bring in help subsidize some of the lower rents that they get on their boats. And so there is interactions there. And I think that, you know, Measure D zone is great, but I do think that the entire waterfront in the land trust should be looked at as in this working waterfront. And whatever the definitions come up with or the policy that we come up with, if it's zoning, should keep in mind, you know, a longer term goal and a greater goal of, you know, what do we want people to experience when they come to Morro Bay. And there could be other, you know, as a side note off the box a little bit, is the, you know, we have these schedules of gross sales. And I mean, there could be within this structure, there could be also incentives. And I guess this comes down to more subsidizing, but, you know, if they're more Measure D compliant, maybe they're gross, if that's what we decide to promote, then maybe their gross sales percentages are lower. And maybe if it's something that we would allow, but it's not as favorable for the zone, maybe they're a little higher. And I know that might be seem like some unfair taxing, but it could be a way to encourage businesses that are in the zoning that we want to exist in those areas. Might not prevent it, but if we don't get it in there, and maybe we do have some kind of blend of that and presented zoning, and so the people who do put the higher tier zoning or lower tier, whatever direction your tier goes, you know, maybe they have a higher tax, and it's, you know, it's not to penalize that business, but that would be maybe a business that's unrelated to that zone.
Gene?
Yeah, I wholly agree with you, Neil. I had same thoughts this afternoon. I'm ready to make a recommendation if you guys are ready for one.
I would just like to make one more comment.
Comment. Sure.
It pretty much sounds like we're all looking at the whole Morro Bay
as
working waterfront, and it's just figuring out how to make that work is the big job. Go ahead, Gene.
I recommend to the City Council that in order to ensure a vibrant waterfront, the City of Morro Bay self-designate all of the waterfront as a working waterfront with follow-up on policies, perhaps zoning, and other land use and water use implementations, strategies, and or measures.
I second the motion.
So, Gene, you have a motion, and Dana will second it. Any comment?
We need to set some boundaries, from including the intake and how far south do we want to go.
Well, the second thing on number two in this report is the boundaries.
Okay.
So this, maybe we just...
If it's the City of Morro Bay, the City of Morro Bay is responsible for a certain zone, right? And that's the trust, the land trust, or the water trust.
Right, which would basically go from Coleman to Inn at Morro Bay, right?
Is that, yeah. Where would that go to?
Well, the trust property, I mean, we're not exclusive to just staying in the trust property box with this process.
Right.
But by happenstance, it pretty much is all in the box. That's our waterfront. It fits in the box.
So where does the Back Bay?
Lease sites, there's on past the old fuel dock. There's drawn out lease sites through the Bay Shore Bluffs Park area. And then, as you recall, the old Golden Tee in front of what's now the Inn at Morro Bay, there used to be some slips out there. So there's a lease site out there as well. It's unoccupied right now. Once you get to Fairbank Point and beyond, the trust waters actually are kind of offshore, about 200 feet, kind of follow the shoreline around Windy Cove and then go outside the State Park Marina, and then that's kind of it. So The State Park Marina really isn't in the
zone. Is that zone in a second motion, or is this?
Yeah. Oh, second zone? Second motion?
Is that, is that what we're looking at here tonight, having a different recommendation for the area that that would pertain to, or is that all in?
Well, you have it under number one and two, Eric.
Right. It's, so it could be separate, because you've already established that it's some or all. If this is the same.
So I think I think with Gene's motion, if I heard it right, the designation part, he's basically stated we're going to self-designate, we're going to declare that our working waterfront is a certain area, and he started to define it, but that can be a follow-on motion. But we want to follow it up with policies, zoning strategies, measures, other things. Those are the things that we can develop that you bring up, that Mayor Irons brought up. Those are the things that, as we move forward into this, we can further vet those and feed it into the general plan, local coastal plan.
Correct.
Does that get at what you're trying to get at? Yeah, perhaps. Zoning's a whole different animal.
Okay, so we still have a motion on the floor. We have a second. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? So we have 5-0.
And Gene, if we could get a copy of that. Is that just handwritten or something you have printed out? Okay, maybe after the meeting we'll make sure I want to get that.
So does anyone want to tackle the actual area? I'd like to include, even the Back Bay Marina. I'm still, an advocate of that we need to maintain that. And if we lose that, we're going to lose part of our working waterfront, personally. The ambience that's down there. I was down there today. That place is...
I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
Coleman Beach to State Park Marina?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. I
work there.
Obviously, we're going to keep some beautiful green space in between undeveloped coves and this and that. But I think that's
great. And that could be part of the process as it evolves that we want to keep some green space, open space in between in this working waterfront. There's nothing to say. Because the working waterfront doesn't mean you have to develop the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yeah, and spot, if you did spot zoning... You could exclude areas that are already grandfathered in if there's already residential homes there.
I'd like to make a motion to have our working waterfront should mean the entirety of our waterfront from Coleman Beach to the Back Bay Marina. State Park Marina. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Dana seconds it. I have a motion on the table. Any discussion? Neil?
Is the rock shoreline not included in this for any particular reason? There's not going to be any development, I assume, out there, but on the roadway out there, past Coleman Beach to the Widow Walls parking lot?
Do you have a second on your motion yet?
Yeah. Okay. We're having a discussion.
Then you can have a discussion.
We're in discussion.
Trying to be parliamentarian here.
That's a good thought, because
And that's something
there's Parks and Recs has some areas up there that... But that would be, we wouldn't need it because that's kind of.
Well, Coleman Beach includes that little wharf or whatever you got out there, right?
We've talked about generating other sources of revenue. We've talked about going out to the rock and allowing different food trucks or surfboard rentals.
Yeah, but
that's
a different concept.
I understand, Gene, but I'm just saying, if it's, is that our waterfront also? Is that part of our working waterfront to?
That's up to us to define.
That's what
so
I'm
the,
trying to...
So the Tidelands Trust, technically Tidelands Trust property, basically it goes from off Fairbank Point out 3 mile line and then it comes back in about off Highway 41 and goes as far inland as roughly the dirt extension of Embarcadero and follows it back down into Embarcadero. So it does include the rock and the rock itself and all the dirt parking lots.
Well...
Target rock, including the rock?
Yeah. No, you're right, because, we've discussed RV parking out there, limited, and we've talked, as you said, food trucks, volleyball courts, everything. So you're absolutely right. It should probably be encompassed in it. So I'm going to take
I don't know where you stop, because then you got the where you guys have your office and commercial fisherman's yard.
Yeah, and the baiters out there in our yard.
The creek with the bridge.
Well, that's off the water.
It's all city.
Yeah,
and
that's
Bay.
Not waterfront anymore.
I understand.
But certainly the, you know, from off, you know, from Highway 41 south, that's, I mean, it's beach. Is that waterfront?
Well, that's zoned. What is that zoned right now, Eric?
Oh, God, probably recreation, open space.
Right.
With all those storage for the fishermen and then...
Well,
and
back behind, it's zoned something different. I'm talking about just the beach itself from the dunes westward is...
Ashley. I'm just trying to make sure we capture what we need to capture. And I don't know. I'm not trying to nitpick, but...
So do we want to vote this down and start a new motion?
You could do a new one or amend it. I mean, yes, it depends if you...
All right, I'd like to amend my motion and actually rescind it and make a motion to have the designation to be Target Rock, the Rock, down to the Back Bay, the State Park Marina.
So did you get a rescind on your second?
Yeah, I'll rescind my second and second the new motion.
And any
so from the Rock, not yeah. Target Rock. So Target Rock's just where the otters are. The Rock.
The Rock. More Rock.
The bigger one.
So do I have any discussion on that?
And you seconded that?
And you seconded it, Dana. Thank you. So hearing no discussion, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So we have a little bit of, and you know what would be good, if you could get me an email on this before, you know, Tuesday of next week, and I'll present this to the GPAC meeting on Wednesday night. I will be there.
I'll work with Gene, yeah, hopefully tonight, and we'll get the exact language that he did and work with Paul and make sure he got the minutes and then this motion here. And if you want to present it or if you want to write it in a letter, I'll draft that up for you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll use that not just for the GPAC and that process, but to ship this up to the city council as well. I'll figure out when to get that agendized for city council consideration. I think it's important that we, because I've heard, you know, differing opinions from different folks about what area it should be. So I think if we got the good recommendation from to go to the council, get the council to hopefully salute it and say, yes, let's go with this, then it can get the committee going and maybe we move forward with getting some consultancy too, depending on how things go.
Okay. All right, thank you. So, declaration of future agenda items is our next topic here. Now, I think, Erica, do we have anything that could be forthcoming that we would want to discuss? The Coast Guard MOU, the study of the solidification of the soil underneath the slips. The RFQ.
You're not going to let that RFQ go, are you? One of the things I was going to try and get on this agenda, but then backed into this because I think it was more important to keep this process moving. I think this was brought up at the last meeting or maybe the meeting before, an update on sort of the projects and things going on the leases and waterfront.
Yeah.
We're due to do that.
Well, there's a lot of things going on, as you know, we've alluded to. I mean, I guess the Otter Rock is for sale, and actually there is a gentleman that is negotiating to buy it right now. Mm-hmm. So, and then combining those two lease sites, the boatyard and the Otter Rock. So we're going to have another, you know, and that's another. Pardon me? Well... You can talk to him. You can talk to him. He might. That's not a bad idea.
Associated is coming in this next week to do a bunch of piling replacing up and down the Embarcadero. So that's good.
Who is paying for that? Is City More?
I think there's about four or five different lease site owners that have repair work.
Should I get in line on that, Gene?
Coast Guard, I mean, it's already on the list. If I had something to update, I'd update, but.
Well, Well, we're going to have new city council our next meeting.
We'll see how the RFQ process goes.
Also, correct?
A couple meetings away.
No, I mean, when is the election?
November 8th, right? Oh, November. The council gets seated December something. Second meeting in December, I believe, is when the new council's seating. Assuming the election is all done and certified, which should be. I mean, that's typically how it works.
Okay, well, we'll talk, and I might not be here next meeting, unfortunately. I have a personal thing, too, so Ron will probably be our chair. I'll talk to the professor when he gets back on the 23rd.
I have one more announcement.
Okay, Eric.
This is Polly's last meeting. Way.
Yeah. Special. Snuck that in at the end, huh?
No, you knew. Polly is retiring.
We all know she's retiring. You forgot
the champagne. Gene, champagne tomorrow. Office.
What's your final day, Polly?
It's December 30th.
December 30th. Okay. It's going to be her last day. She's taking a retirement. Good for her. I'm going to miss her.
So how did you get wrangled into doing this meeting, Polly? Lori?
I wanted it to be my last meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
We really are going to miss you.
Miss you. Thank you.
That's an understatement.
And your system.
Okay. Well, hearing no other future agenda items, I'll discuss that with Eric and Ron if I'm not here. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Gene, that's usually always you.
So moved.
No, it's not. Okay, I make a motion, we adjourn.
I'll second it. Okay, we have a motion to adjourn. We have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Opposed?
All opposed? Thank you.